Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to Today We Learn, number 37, in space!
Where nobody can hear this podcast.
Where no one can hear you scream about how much you enjoyed what you're about to hear.
Yeah, space.
Yeah, guys, we have a pretty awesome episode for you today.
Here's the deal. Last week, Dan and I have been out of town, so we missed an episode last week, and we apologize. But you know what? This episode...
Good things come to those who wait.
Yeah, you guys, this is like a dual episode. I think it went a little long to begin with, which is awesome anyways, because this is such a great fucking episode. You guys are in for a treat. This is really
fun. So, you guys, you get ready to blast off, because this podcast
is out of this world. God damn, this is a fun episode.
You know, this is like the final frontier of entertainment. I'd say we went to infinity and beyond your expectations.
Listen, guys, it's, you know... It's like the fourth best plan.
Third space reference.
Oh, man. I'm racking my brain. I'm telling you what. Here's the deal. Like most of these podcasts, they say a little bit grounded, but this one, it's almost like we had no gravity.
Yeah, it's really, it's like a black hole of wisdom, and we just sucked it all in. It's amazing that this podcast did not collapse in on itself.
Yeah, I mean, like last week we didn't have an episode, but this week we have a real shooting star for a guest.
Yeah, it's pretty stellar. but seriously, you guys, this week you may know him from his brief stint on the internet as a meme, as NASA Mohawk guy.
Yeah.
He was working on the Curiosity rover mission. Now he is a mission engineer Europa Clipper mission.
Yeah, goddamn, is that interesting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating stuff, so...
Buckle in. You guys,
get ready. I think this guy has the right stuff for this episode.
That movie's good, by the way. If you haven't seen the right stuff, watch
the
right
this
stuff.
Is Podcast Armageddon.
This is a really fun episode. A good friend of ours, friend of Dan and I's. We've been trying to get him on for a while, texting back and forth, blah, blah, blah. I've known him for a while. And it's really fun. I'm glad we finally got him on. And you guys, I'm trying to think of some more goddamn space references, but I can't. So I guess we'll just fucking jump right into this fucking space shuttle of a podcast here.
Yeah.
You guys are going to enjoy this. So strap in.
Today we learn.
Today we learn number
38. 37. Sorry.
37.
I went into hyperspace.
Hyperspace.
Jumped to next week's episode.
Yeah, yep.
Today we learn number 37 with Babak Ferdowsi.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
It's gonna be like an hour. So it was a fair
sounds like a panel, all right.
It was good. It was great. I think people are just excited about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Now, I notice. I know you tend to change your hairstyle for new projects you're on.
I haven't changed it. This is me just like doing fun stuff.
But it's purple.
I was gonna get. It is like.
I haven't seen it. Magenta.
It's like a magenta.
I haven't seen that yet. That's new. How old is that?
That's this weekend.
Okay.
Saturday morning.
I was gonna say I don't remember that at Coachella.
Yeah, it wasn't. But, Coachella was just short on the side. Like I just had
a
cut.
Now, because I used to have that color hair back in a whole decade ago. I was in a punk band.
Yeah.
Did you have to bleach any of that?
Oh, so much.
Okay, I was going to say, because that's with dark hair, it's hard, vibrant magenta. Like, it's really nice. Like, I like it.
I'm looking forward. It's supposed to get into, like, a hot pink after this.
Okay. Really?
I'm really excited for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll wash out. Yeah, it'll fade into that. So you bleached, did you just do, like, the center, or is that, because it's still dark?
It's bleached in pieces.
So okay,
like,
so yeah.
Bits and pieces of dark and
nice.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that, because I've been reading, and I seen you post a thing about a new logo, and you got a new Jupiter
I will get a Europa cut soon, like a something for Europa soon. I just had to figure, I was thinking about what it was still recently. I was what should I do? I have some ideas.
So that's commencing that whole process.
So it's still a study, technically, right? We're in this phase where NASA has asked people to look at the feasibility of doing a mission to Europa at a certain cost, less than a couple.
It's the Clipper?
Clipper, yeah.
Cool.
And Europa is the moon.
Europa is
all water.
Correct. That is, yeah, it's pretty much, well, we think it's like a rocky core and this icy crust, and in between that is this salty ocean.
Okay. Awesome.
But it's one of those places where it's definitely been, like, you know, an interest for a long time.
Yeah.
And the science community has been like, we should go there, and it's very expensive to do that. So we think we came up with a good solution, which is this clipper style, which is where instead of going into a traditional, like, circular orbit just around Europa, we, if you imagine instead that you have, you know, Jupiter in the center of this, and Europa is the going around Jupiter in its circular orbit, we're going to go around and swing around like this.
Okay.
Kind of like a racetrack shape, right? It's an elliptical shape. Mm-hmm. And we'll catch up to Europa basically around here each time.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
So, like, we'll swing by here. In fact, both of us move. So Europa goes over here, and then we swing around here.
A little
so
slingshot
effect. Kind of like doing this thing.
Okay.
It's essentially doing that this
like
whole time.
Like one of those spiral graphs.
Yeah. It'll make it, essentially, eventually over time, it'll make that, like, kind of petal shape looking thing.
Cool.
And then that way we stay outside of Jupiter where the radiation, because Jupiter has a very strong radiation environment. Stay far enough where the electronics can survive a little longer. Because that's what drives the cost.
Okay. Yeah.
Exposure to radiation is what usually, I mean, for a Europa mission especially,
what
kills us in terms of what technology we can use.
Damn, that's awesome.
So it's
and how long solution. Does it, would it take, like if we sent something up there, how long?
So
like, what's the travel time?
If we launch now, it's two, so here's the thing. If we launch now, the best rockets we have would basically take us 6 to 7 years to get there.
God damn.
Wow.
The reason is that none of them have enough energy to get you out of the sun's well of gravity directly.
Correct.
So instead what we do is we fly in towards the sun, go by Venus, do a gravity assist, go by Earth once or twice, depending on the design, and then out to Jupiter.
Would you go past Mars, too, to get there?
No, Mars we wouldn't usually do a gravity. I mean, you can, but that requires more. It's if you imagine, because they're all going around the sun, it's easier for us to kind of fly in and target something that's going in because it's also going around the sun more often, so we can kind of like do this little like it's easy to kind of time it such that we get there at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
But with Mars, it's further out. It's almost like a 2-year orbit around the sun.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's harder to like try to slingshot around Mars. The reason Voyager was so amazing was because it was like this perfect alignment of planets for just bouncing from one to the next as opposed to like nowadays they're all
a series
all over.
Of convenient connecting flights.
It really was. It was like there someone realized, James Webb, like one of the, now who's getting an astronomy, whatever, the follow-on astronomy telescope, the subsequent follow-on to Hubble, named after him.
Good.
He was one of the people who was like, hey, this is a once in a 100-year opportunity for us to get this alignment. So let's make these missions happen.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So and that's if we launched it now. And after we build it,
one of the things that NASA is working on. Which we we don't know where it will be. So we're scheduling for a 2022 launch.
Okay.
So one of the things NASA is working on is called SLS Space Launch System, and it is a massive rocket, kind of on the order of a Saturn V scale.
Okay.
Very large, and that would have enough energy right now, according to their design. They haven't built and tested and everything. According to the design, should have enough energy to do a direct to Jupiter, and that's that's 2.5 years. So it's a lot faster for
us. 2.5 years.
2.5 years to Jupiter as opposed to getting 6.5 to 7.5 years. Yeah.
And that would be, that scientifically would be achievable in 7 years, about 8 years, right?
Well, I mean,
because we would launch it in theory.
We'd launch it both. Either case, we're not going to launch before 2022.
Correct.
We have to build a mission.
Yeah.
But the real issue is just how do you manage a team and how do you make sure the spacecraft stays safe for that long?
Yeah.
So we'd like shorter missions in general because, if electronics have a, you think about your warranty and something that has to last for 8 or 9 years as opposed to lasting for 5 years is, it's just tougher for us.
Yeah, I mean, we can barely have an iPhone make it to 3 years, so.
Mine barely seems to last a year, but
that's until you get that sweet spiderweb app on the screen.
That's awesome. You can put the cans, some people use the cans, some people don't.
That's fine.
That voice you're hearing, if you're tuning in, is a gentleman known as Bobek Ferdowsi. I said that right. Bobek. Time we're hanging out, I always ask. I always forget how to pronounce his name, and I always feel horrible.
Yeah,
because I always forget.
Yeah, you're.
And then one time you're just like, just call me Bob, and I'm like, yeah, but that sounds weird.
I thought that would be better.
Bob's. I'm gonna start calling you Bob. I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. it's Bobek.
Bobek.
My parents chose that one.
Yeah.
I like it now. I didn't like it when I was in
middle
school.
Yeah, you didn't like it when you had to have teachers being like,
well, it was less the teachers, and I remember, like, the number of kids who'd be like, give me the ball back. And I was like, oh, man.
You really nailed me on that one.
Yeah. And then it became ball sack pretty quickly. So.
Oh, no. See,
yeah,
the ingenuity of middle schoolers.
Yeah,
cannot that's awesome.
Be. Yeah, but you showed them because now you are a mission engineer on the Europa Clipper.
It's exciting. Yeah. I don't know if I showed them. I'm not even sure how many of them.
Yeah, well, they might understand. They're still busy trying to think of other rhymes for ball sack.
There's
got to be a third one.
There's a comic Saul sack. I don't know.
Yeah.
Off the spot. I've been...
Saul, what were you going, where were you going with that one? I'm really kidding.
You know, just like a bag of old Jewish men.
I'm like callback, so I was just trying to pronounce it. Yeah. I was like throwing things out there. Yeah. And
sack of Sauls.
Yeah.
No, Bobak, we always start, we like to start off each episode with the guests providing either a fact about themselves or something they've learned recently.
Oh, okay. I have a good one that I learned recently.
Great.
In the conversation today, I was in a panel at Space Fest, one of our scientists brought up, and I had kind of understood this a little bit before, but I didn't really realize how cool it was, that we have this instrument on the rover that allows us to kind of detect the isotope weights. So it's the same thing as carbon dating. You know, we know that certain heavier carbons will last a little longer than light ones, so we can tell how old a certain, you know, a bone or whatever structure you're looking at is. But I didn't realize, I knew we could do it on Mars, I didn't really understand how, and I guess what I learned today was very cool, was that these, when we drill into a sample and we take a sample out of Mars, there are certain, you know, like an elements there that are heavier because of cosmic rays. Okay. They're only formed because of that. And so as a result, we can actually date this by how long these things have been exposed to these cosmic rays. So we know how old that surface essentially is, relatively speaking, how exposed the surface is. So it's kind of a kind of carbon dating on Mars, and it's
so
pretty neat.
Since we did that recently or whatever.
Well, I just learned it recently.
You learned it recently.
Yeah. We had a member of our team, I guess, a science team member who joined recently and realized that this was a capability, even though we didn't we didn't actually anticipate that early on in the mission.
Yeah.
We were looking for other things using that functionality, which is one of the things you kind of look for is you want to understand the atmospheric past of Mars. And so we know that a lot of Mars' atmosphere is kind of blown off and lost over time.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly all the functions by which it's lost. So you kind of expect that certain heavier isotopes are going to stay near the surface and the lighter ones get kind of stripped away. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we brought that instrument, or one of the reasons why we brought that instrument. There's many reasons. But then they also were able to apply it to this ground sample, which is
kind of
very cool.
And how accurate is that relative to something like
carbon dating? That's a good question. I don't know what kind of time frame they can narrow it down. It's probably not quite as precise.
Yeah, but
we
still...
We probably don't have quite as good a baseline for those things like carbon dating on Earth. But
still, I imagine it's a good ballpark.
Yeah, well, no,
yeah.
At least like 6 days, according to
Well, one of the things that's really cool for us is, you know, we're looking for organics on Mars, and those can be damaged pretty easily by sort of like said cosmic rays and radiation environments and everything else. So if we can kind of date the sample around it, we can say, hey, this stuff has been protected from those things for longer, therefore it has a better chance of preserving some of those things.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of a really neat way of doing that. And we're learning, I mean, this is kind of all harkens down to we are, even though we've had this rover and kind of, you know, had a plan for the rover and everything else, we're actually becoming better detectives using the exact rover that we designed. We just didn't know how to do it as well.
These unintended functions.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Which is, once that happens, you'll just be like, oh yeah, we're pretty great.
Yeah. I think the science guys are just so smart. It's kind of amazing when they talk about it and they can kind of describe a Martian past and all these things. So it's just,
it intrigues the hell out of me. It fascinates me. I can't comprehend a lot of that just because it's so above my intellect. It's so cool. So, I mean, I accept it. It's like, tell me more.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Tell me some more. Here's a question. I seen a picture. I don't know if you tweeted it or somebody else or maybe NASA's social or whatever. It was a selfie from the rover.
Yeah.
But it looked like it was from a camera that was detached from the actual rover.
So, yes. It's cool. A lot of people think that's like some kind of fake or whatever.
A selfie arm.
No. And this actually, oddly enough, came up today, in the panel, but there was a little bit more backstory than I knew about this. So we have what we call a microscopic imager, essentially. It's a Mars hand lens imager, or MOLLE.
Okay.
And MOLLE is what we kind of, it's on the end of the arm. We have like this kind of turret at the end of the arm that spins around. And we usually put it up against a rock to kind of like image high resolution up against the rock, look for fine, you know, grain and things like that. But the investigator for that realized that you could also kind of turn it around on the rover. And so he came. We used it once or twice to look for something on the rover, really. But they really realized that if you did this series of kind of like, it's basically 55 positions. Mm-hmm. Oh. So if you move the arm to 55 positions and take 55 images and then Photoshop them together, so make them all like line up and clean up the stuff. Exactly. you create the selfie. And it turns out now this is like the entire context kind of in like the historical context for all these things. Like, oh, here's the first scoop we did. Here's the first drill we did. Here's the latest drill we did. And it's all, you know, now we can kind of capture the rover in that moment.
Yeah.
That's doing, awesome. It's like, you know, it's first. And that it's kind of like really baby's cool. first steps.
But yeah.
Yeah, so we don't have a camera, unfortunately. Another camera.
I was gonna say, I'm like, I seen that. I'm like, goddamn, that looks so. And it was an awesome photo.
It's, yeah. it's great.
And like, how did they do that? I'm like,
it's got a weird Martian atmospheric filter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Also known as Nashville.
not Kelvin, at least.
Yes, yeah, hell no. Sorry, Kelvin.
But one of the actually really neat things is we have a 2020 mission that's kind of coming up after this, and it's a Curiosity class. It's going to use a lot of the same stuff, lessons learned, and everything. But one of the proposals is, and we don't know exactly what it's going to carry. We have a goal, which is sort of like look for evidence of life in present or past on Mars. But one of the proposed instruments is a basically like a small helicopter that would detach from the rover and like could do reconnaissance.
A little helicopter drone?
Yeah, like basically like a quadcopter, kind of like you see for cameras. But the idea is to put this on Mars and use it like a local reconnaissance, be like, oh, this is where we should be driving.
Yeah.
Who knows if that gets picked.
So we're sending a new rover up to Mars then?
So we have actually a couple missions. We have a couple on their way. There's MAVEN, which is an orbiter that gets there this fall.
Okay.
And then 2016, we have one called InSight, which is using...
as cool a name as MAVEN.
MAVEN's pretty great, which stands for, I think, Mars Atmospheric Volatility Experiment. Something. Someone's going to be unhappy that I don't remember what that stands for. We have the InSight, which is a lander, not a rover. And that follows in the footsteps of the 2007 Phoenix mission, which is just so we're using that design. And then in 2020, we have this Curiosity kind of follow-on, which is building the steps. So we had with the Mars exploration rovers, look for water. With Curiosity, we have look for habitability. And now we're saying, hey, look, now we can tell you Mars was habitable, so let's look for life.
Aside from light, because that light was escaping from a cave.
Oh, yes, the infamous like little speck in the distance. Yeah.
Did you ever find out what that was?
So there's a couple of theories. The first theory was that it was a cosmic ray, which we've seen that before, where, a high-energy particle will smash into the sensor, and you'll see a kind of a flicker or bright light. But we saw it in subsequent days, so we're pretty sure that the coincidence of that happening twice is unlikely. But both images were taken about the same time of day and with the roughly same sun angle, essentially. And so we think it's just a light leak. We knew that there are light leaks in the camera. They're not exactly perfectly so we think it's just a light leak that's hitting the sensor.
Gotcha. Just a false positive.
Yeah.
So it all looks you cool, Mars though. Truthers really out cool. there, yeah. calm down.
There's not a Coke can reflecting...
C-3PO. C-3PO in the distance, wandering.
Cool. Well, I was doing some research and stuff I didn't know about you. You were, if your Wikipedia page is correct...
I've updated myself, so I hope it's...
Perfect.
Yeah.
you were born in Philadelphia.
I am. I was, rather.
You were. Now, here's a fact about Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the largest city in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It's the second largest city on the East Coast of the United States, and it's the fifth... most populous city in the United States. Philadelphia is the fifth largest city in the United States.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Then I also, I got some facts about you. Then you moved to Tokyo. You went to school in Tokyo.
Well, first we moved to the Bay Area.
You moved to San Francisco.
So we moved into a town called El Cerrito, I think, first. I can't remember exactly what order we moved in the Bay Area. I was super young. But it's like roughly one or two when we moved to the Bay Area.
Okay.
And then moved to Tokyo for middle school and high school.
Nice.
Middle school and high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
So good time.
What part of Tokyo were you in?
So I lived in an area called Kichijoji,
mm-hmm.
Which I would like. I don't want to sound strange, but I'd be like, it's kind of like Brooklyn to Manhattan.
Yeah.
So it's actually a kind of cool area. There's like a man-made lake in there that's pretty famous. There's like the Studio Ghibli Museum is actually right near that area, and there's like a fun shopping thing going on there. So, but it's not quite like downtown Tokyo.
Yeah,
it's not like Shinjuku and Shibuya and Harajuku where all the kids are.
Yeah.
So I feel like it has a little bit of a fun vibe, but like just enough distance from the city that's not like Manhattan.
Nice.
Okay.
And we moved there, and it was supposed to be for 2 years and turned out to be six.
Okay. Six years.
Yeah. And fun times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it.
I've seen that, and I compiled some. I don't know much. I've never been to Tokyo. Dan's been to Tokyo a few times.
It's good.
I've never been.
Oh, it's
so
great.
So I was reading some stuff about that. That's on my bucket list. Like I have like a bucket list of my near bucket list of travels is I really want to go to Tokyo very, very soon.
Yes.
And I want to go see Machu Picchu before they close it down.
What, they're closing it down?
Well, I've read stories and
they're going to limit the number of visitors.
Yes, because they're getting
up
so
like
many,
the old Star Tours.
Because it's on. I've heard they're going to like limit the visitors, and I want to see it before that. You know.
Oh yeah. Do you know when they're doing that?
No idea.
By the way, do you have Everest on your list as well? Because I hear
that's on my list. But I feel like that's really dangerous.
It's a lot of. I mean, it's also a lot of practice getting ready for that.
Yeah, exactly. I did Runyon.
I feel like
I'm good.
I feel like if Everest is on my bucket list, then like 19 other things need to precede that. travel mount climb. What's the climbing up? What's it called again?
Summit.
Summit. Yeah. Yes. Summit Mount Everest is number 36. Summit. Yeah. All these other things is like
the seven continents or whatever.
Because that's. I mean, I definitely want to see Mount Everest at least.
I would like to at least see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like go to the base camp.
Right. I think that's a far enough.
High five a Sherpa. Then get out of there.
I get it. It's awesome. Really cool.
Here's a flag. If you get to the top, put it up there for me.
I don't have it written down, but since you bring up Mount Everest. Mm. I was listening to a podcast the other day. Mount Everest is huge on Earth. There's a mountain on Mars.
Yes, Olympus Mons.
Olympus Mons that is like fucking dwarfs Mount Everest.
Yeah, so I think it's something like five times taller and the size of a state. I can't remember if it's like New Mexico or Arizona or something like that, but one of those size states.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Olympus Mons. I was listening to, I can't remember what I was listening to, but I heard that. And
yeah, it's the largest known mountain.
Yeah,
and well, in our solar system, and probably anywhere else, we don't know mountains outside our solar system.
And Mars is like a quarter of the size of Earth, or it's like three.
It's smaller than Earth. It's about a quarter, and it's about 3/8 the gravity.
So if you take, think of how big Mount Everest is on Earth.
The moon is a quarter of the Earth. Mars has got to be bigger than that.
It's got like three. I know it's smaller.
Yeah. I should know this probably.
But if it's five times the size of Mount Everest. On a smaller planet, like that just blows.
Well,
my
part
mind
of
out.
That's because of the gravity, though. They can get larger.
It can get larger. Yeah. But yeah, Olympus Mons. While we bring up, that's on my bucket list of 100 is to summit Olympus Mons. So figure out how to get me
someday.
Out there. Someday.
Wait till at least the early 2020s.
It's warmer there, right? It'll be at least there's no avalanches.
Oh, it's great this time of year.
So back to Tokyo, I guess, what we're talking about while we were...
Wait, I typed in Philadelphia facts, and this one, I need to know if this is true. Philadelphia is considered to be one of the most haunted cities in the United States of America, and has one of the highest densities of haunted houses.
Well, you're asking me this?
Do you remember from your youth at all?
No, I was 1 year old when I left that place.
You know, yeah, but nothing spooky happened in the...
I feel like it's
spooky
one of those,
shapes.
One of those, you know, older cities. It's probably more spooky.
That's, you know what? That actually brings up a good point. That'd be I'd be curious to do a research on the most haunted cities and find out like which if they range from being around longer, more you know. Or
I mean, certainly at least like if they had a pretty big population for a long time,
for a longer period. That's very interesting.
Yeah. That reminds me of...
I thought you were looking up how big Mars was.
Oh, no, I did. I looked that up as well.
I was like, hold on a second.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, or as we call it, the Mars of America. It is about... They're saying it's about roughly one half the size of Earth.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's about 1/9 the Earth's mass.
Yeah.
If this quick Google search is to be believed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, can we take pictures... Do you have... pictures of Olympus Mons, or isn't that way far away from where the rover
is? It's not where the rover is at. The closest thing we have is called Mount Sharp or Aeolus Mons, and if you like the older terminology. But that's, it's I think, about 5 kilometers high, so it's not quite as massive. But it's bigger than many Earth mountains still. But, okay. Yeah.
Cool. Well, back to Tokyo. Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back to Tokyo.
Ladies and gentlemen, back to Tokyo. Back to Tokyo with the weather.
It was a radio. I was doing like a radio voice.
Okay. Sure.
That's what they sound like. That's exactly. Yeah.
Those
like
radio men.
Morning radio guys with the traffic cam. Tokyo is the capital of Japan, It's the center of the greater Tokyo area and the most populous metropolitan area in the world. Tokyo is the most populous metropolitan area in the
world. Yeah, they really pack them in Tokyo. Like, little apartments are called one-room mansions.
Yes.
And it's not like – it's a mansion just coming from the French term for, like, a manser apartment or something like that. It's not just being ironic about how little space they have.
They're measured in floor mat sizes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like square feet. You don't talk about like, oh, it's a 500 square foot apartment. It's like there are tatami mats that you find.
3x3 tatami.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is a 6 tatami mat room.
Really?
And that's the unit of, which is kind of a great.
So there's not like studio or 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom. It's
I mean, they'd still be like a 1-bedroom, 6-tatami
place.
Yeah, but exactly. You'd be like, oh yeah, no, this is a 9.5 tatami mats.
How big is a tatami mat?
What is it? Maybe like a 2 feet by 6 feet. And so it's about like the size of a person laying down. Would be like roughly.
So like a yoga mat almost.
Yeah, something like that.
If you fit like 9 yoga mats in here, that'll be $18,000.
Yeah, exactly. A month.
18,000 bitcoins. Here's. This blew my mind. Tokyo isn't a city.
What? It's a prefecture, right?
Yeah. People are like, I always figured, Tokyo is a city. I mean, as far as in the United States.
For all intents and purposes. It's a city.
Yeah, but, in the United States, we think of things as cities, but apparently, and according to the world, Tokyo is often referred to and thought of as a city, but it's officially known as a metropolitan prefecture.
Yeah. It's basically just a way of organizing all the neighborhoods and towns and stuff that would be contained within there. Like, Los Angeles should be a prefecture.
Yeah.
Because there's so many places here. Santa Monica, West Hollywood, Beverly
kind
Hills.
Especially really neat about Tokyo is every train stop is essentially its own little, like, township.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's all the markets and everything are gathered around that train stop. So, really, you don't need to leave, your neighbor.
You can exist in your hood just fine.
Pretty much. But it's very cool. It definitely feels like a collection of small cities as opposed to, and when you get to downtown, maybe those lines
blur.
Yeah,
there's a little more unity once you're on, like, the Yamanote.
Exactly.
Loop.
Exactly.
But like Los Angeles or, like, New York, where you have, like, Manhattan and all those are technically still New York, right? And then Los Angeles, you have Culver City, you have Palms, you have Hollywood, you have West Hollywood.
Right.
So really.
Within each of those, imagine they all had their own downtowns.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Kichijoji, like, where I lived. I was like a 10-minute walk from the train station, but on the way there's like a mall and the entire mall that you need and like 3 or 4 department stores and all these things, like, grocery stores. They're
all the convenience.
Yeah. Yeah, and the convenience stores and everything. So they're all in that, like, they're all kind of, you would still go downtown Kichijoji, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it would,
each small town has their own downtown.
Right. And, again, as you get further from central Tokyo, they'll get smaller. They just be like one grocery store and convenience stores and a video game arcade or whatever. But you'd still kind of walk towards the station to get to stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. Yeah. And then here's the definition of prefecture, Prefecture. The West's use of prefecture to label these regions of Japan stems from the 15th century Portuguese explorers and traders' use of prefectura to describe the fieldoms they encountered there. Its original sense in Portuguese, however, was closer to municipality. That's essentially what it meant in Portuguese, more of like a municipality. So yeah, this was a couple fun facts about Tokyo. I learned those things just now because I've never been to Tokyo. So
you
that's
need
awesome.
To, we I need to get to go. You to go. Yeah.
We need to go. We should do like a big trip.
Yeah. Let's just go, man.
Let's go
right now.
Clear
your schedule.
When does clear your stop working down to Jupiter and let's go to Tokyo. Yeah,
I'm ready.
Speaking of Tokyo, I guess speaking of Japan, Daniel here has a T-shirt. Godzilla.
Godzilla shirt.
Godzilla comes out this week. I'm very excited to see it. Godzilla is actually a portmanteau of the. It's actually pronounced in Japanese. I believe it's pronounced Gojira.
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 Yeah.
Perfect.
You can just break down most Japanese words. If you're daunted by them, just break them down because they're usually 2 or 3
little
word syllables.
It's always
that just slap together.
Kind of a consonant sound and
Gojira.
The vowel sound, basically.
Gojira.
Yeah, exactly.
And Gojira is a portmanteau of the Japanese words. I'm not going to pronounce these, but I'll say them in English, and then Dan can look at the facts and pronounce them, because he can do that. But it's a portmanteau of the Japanese words for gorilla and whale.
Gorira and kutira. So, go for gorira, gorilla, and Kuchira. Kuchira. Whale.
Yeah.
So but it's like that's like a very classic Japanese thing to do.
Yeah,
well.
Just combining.
Like, yeah, combine like, words like karaoke, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, for empty orchestra, but mm-hmm. you just do the okay for orchestra.
Yeah, or even Pokemon is pocket monsters.
Right. Okay. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, they love shortening to like cuter forms.
Yeah.
Okay, what is Hello Kitty?
No, it's just Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty. That's
that's all Hello Kitty will ever be.
I guess here's some more facts about Godzilla here.
Yeah, there's so the first Godzilla suit weighed about 200 pounds, and it was really difficult to move around for the performer, this guy named Haruo Nakajima. And this is kind of gross, but it was a very hot suit. So at the end of every day, they would usually wring out at least a cup of his sweat from the suit.
Quick question, though. Do you think, like, wearing a Godzilla suit might make for an awesome, like, workout routine?
Oh, yeah. You know how, like, people who,
like this,
like the wrestlers, when they're trying to, like, get down to wrestling weight, they're, like, wearing, like, trash bags and like sweatshirts.
It's both. It's like a like weighted vests and sweatsuits.
Exactly.
It's perfect.
It's just like a mobile sauna.
Guys, I think we have like a really nerdy workout routine.
Exactly. Yeah. Just couple that with a juice cleanse. Yeah. Theme
it's,
out.
That's lose weight Gojira style.
Yeah.
Get down to go Gojira.
Destroy the city.
Yeah. That's a lot. Like. Well, it's like they even say like the old Batman suits, even in the 80s, were like very, you know,
sounds
sweats.
Awful,
it's very gross.
Yeah,
Godzilla in his tenure, Gojira has attacked and destroyed Tokyo no fewer than 28 times.
It's always scary when you live there because you're living in constant fear of these Godzilla attacks.
Yeah, it's happened 28 times. It could happen to you.
And Godzilla, and sometimes Mothra comes, and you are just—it's scary.
God help you if it's a Gamera day. That giant turtle.
What was that? And then the trihead was King
Ghidorah.
King Ghidorah. Yeah, he had it was like the three-headed dragon.
Not just an MF Doom side project. It was a giant three-headed dragon.
Three-headed dragon.
Then there was Rodan, not the French sculptor, but the pterodactyl. There were so many monsters. Fun fact about the 1998 Roland Emmerich film, which a lot of us like to forget, It is what it is. It had a great P. Diddy tie-in music video where they sampled Kashmir by Robert Plant.
Great is not the word I would have used.
I mean, it has an extant video.
It has Matthew Broderick.
Exactly.
I think we can
Matthew
all
Broderick,
agree he's
Hank Azaria
great.
Is the cameraman.
Yeah.
That is technically, although a lot of people don't like to remember it, it's technically canon. And what they did is that monster is actually a different beast just named Zilla. And so in the big 50th anniversary celebration, Godzilla Final Wars, they had Godzilla fight Zilla, and Godzilla destroyed him in less than 10 seconds.
Well, because in that movie, Godzilla, or Zilla, I guess now, he was way smaller than Godzilla ever was, right? Like, he wasn't nearly as the size of
Godzilla.
Yeah,
well, I think this Godzilla is also larger than in previous iterations.
I think,
this one is
the latest
300
movie,
feet tall.
The new one, you mean.
The 2014 edition.
But I want to know what happened to all of those Zilla eggs in the basement of Madison Square Garden. If it's canon...
They hatched and became One Direction and other high-ranking people. Have you heard the lizard people
The lizard
theory?
People
Bear
theory.
Bear with me.
That's funny. I'm excited for the movie.
Yeah, no, it should be... from what I've heard, it should be out by the time this comes out.
It comes out on the 16th.
Yeah,
this is
so
coming out on Monday.
I've heard good things in advance, so I have not seen it yet. I've had to ask questions of the people who are in the movie, but I have not seen it yet.
This is fun. Like, this summer season of, like, blockbusters and everything coming out, it's always a fun time of year.
Exactly, okay, well, just like some sweet popcorn films.
Because me and my friend were just talking about this. Now that we're already in mid-May, we've got Gojira coming out. We have the X-Men movie coming out. We have Interstellar coming out.
I am excited.
We have
for that.
How to Train Your.
All You Need Is Kill. Edge of Tomorrow
right,
is what it's called
out.
Now.
The movie's awesome. I'm not supposed to say that. It's very good. All You Need Is Kill. Yep. Edge of Tomorrow, the new Tom Cruise movie. And then we have what other ones? Because we were trying to think of
Maleficent, A Million Ways to Die in the West, 22 Jump Street, Think Like a Man 2, Transformers.
Transformers comes out. And
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I mean, I think what we're really missing is there going to be a new Tyler Perry movie though?
Yes, there probably will be.
Madea Goes to Mars.
Madea Guards the Galaxy.
That will be worse than the History of Mars movies though.
That's right. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is coming out.
That's going to be awesome.
That's good. James Gunn, very
know, Jupiter Ascending, that batshit craziness from the Wachowskis.
Oh, that looks, yeah.
I'm intrigued weird. Because I like the Wachowskis, but this might be, like, the perfect fusion of the Matrix and Cloud Atlas, and I don't know if that's a good thing.
I don't know. I mean,
I liked Cloud Atlas.
I
honestly.
Did too. I liked the book, and if I hadn't read the book, I don't know if I would like the film.
Interesting. See, I didn't read the book. I could have done a movie just in the future world.
Oh, just to so set it, in, in one of the time.
Now we're naming all these movies. We couldn't think of them earlier, and I'm very excited for those. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned Mars movies.
They're all awful. They're all awful.
It's weird.
John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars with Ice Cube.
Love that film. By love, I mean I saw it.
It's so
Mars
awful.
Needs moms.
Mars needs moms.
And of course, the original Total Recall. It's hard to fuck with.
That's
that.
Actually. I mean, that's okay. That's but that really doesn't need Mars. It just sort of is like
you have to
place.
Get your ass to Mars. Yeah, but it could really be any planet.
Yeah. I want one compelling movie on Mars.
John Carter.
What about?
I did not think was a terrible film.
Mars Attacks.
Yeah, Mars Attacks was better than many.
But again, there's been like a tradition that like studio heads have noticed that when you put the word Mars in a film, it doesn't do as well.
No,
people are just for some reason turned off by that in the title, and that's why one of the reasons why they sort of buried John Carter.
Yeah.
Because to the name John Carter alone, I'm like, is this about a cop? Is this about a basketball coach? I don't know.
Yeah, I would never have known.
I'm thinking of the one, it wasn't on Mars, but it was set in the Olympic, let me think about it. It was with O.J. Simpson.
Wow.
Veronica Mars.
No.
Mission to Mars.
No, it was,
Life on Mars, the TV series.
No, it was Capricorn 1.
Okay, Capricorn 1. Okay,
Capricorn 1. But for those of you that don't, I guess you explain it.
No. Capricorn 1 is this
great movie.
70s movie with Elliot Gould.
James Brolin.
Orenthal Jones.
Orenthal Jones Simpson.
Orenthal Jones Simpson.
And it's this, you know, it's kind of a response after the Apollo era. Like, NASA's supposed to go to Mars next, which is the next big step.
Everybody thinks we faked the moon landing and all of that.
And sure enough, they're like, oh, we're behind schedule on this Mars, you know, behind budget and schedule on this Mars program. We'll just fake it in the desert.
Yeah.
And the three guys who are on the ship are like, we're not going to have any of that.
Yeah.
So they start running. But it's kind of a crazy
movie.
Yeah,
they faked it too, though, right? Like, they faked it and they filmed it.
Yes.
And then the astronauts, they were like, you need to keep silent or whatever. And they're like, we need to live our lives. Because apparently there was something happened to where they couldn't bring him back in the story.
Right,
So then they went around and the government was killing him.
I'm sorry for people, we just ruined the entire movie.
Spoiler alert, it's been around. Yeah, spoiler
it's all right.
The movie's been around for 30 years, I feel like it's fair.
But
it's actually
a really good movie.
It's a very good movie,
A good suspense movie. Like, they probably could remake it and it could probably do decent.
Yeah.
I would watch that.
I mean, to be fair, they can always watch Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Is that a movie?
Yeah. It's like a 1964 like B movie.
Oh, that's amazing.
I need to watch that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Here's a fun fact, completely unrelated. Let's take this. Let's go to a food fact here. Here's a fun food fact.
Food fact.
Oreo cookie. Everybody loves Oreos. But Oreo cookie is actually a knockoff of a similar brand. So
Hydrox. Yeah.
People are always like, they think of, you know, you think of brands, and then there's always like the cheaper or the less known brand that you assume is the knockoff, and they're just piggybacking on the success of the bigger brand. But Oreo is actually the knockoff brand piggybacking off of the early success of a company called Hydrox Cookies. Hydrox is the brand name for the cream-filled chocolate sandwich cookie that debuted in 1908.
Wow.
And it was manufactured by the popular Sunshine Biscuits, Sunshine brand. Now, the similar Oreo cookie was introduced later, 4 years later in 1912. It was inspired by the Hydrox, yet Hydrox suffered from the impression of being the knockoff.
Oh, no. Yeah, younger and hotter cookies.
Yeah, so the sales of the Hydrox didn't do too well. Then they ceased production, and then I was just reading recently that they're going to start back up. But compared to Oreos, Hydrox cookies have a slightly more tangy, less sweet filling, and a crunchier cookie that actually gets less soggy in milk. So why the fuck didn't Hydrox do better? Because Oreo cookies get so soggy so
fast. I don't know
fast.
If I would describe it as tangy. I don't want any tangy cookies.
No, I'm just, I mean, I'm reading, I don't.
Yeah, maybe, no, I know.
It's more of a tartness from like yogurt kind
yes,
of.
Yes, yeah.
the Greek, but, a Greek Hydrox.
But I definitely like the idea of
high in protein.
Getting less soggy. I like that.
I feel like Hydrox is a terrible name for a company, and it probably comes from like hydrogenated whatever thing that they were doing, which is like what you don't really want.
No, don't explain what it is. Just make up a name.
Yeah, mechanically separated cream parts.
It's not, I would not want to eat those.
Yeah. Try our cookie skins.
Yeah, and like the logo and everything, if you like Google it, it's all like very like English, like very like trying to be like proper and
it just so they were taking a cue off somebody older.
Yeah, it's like
it looks very old.
Like it sounds like a freaking Game of Thrones house and like their sigil.
Yeah, like do you have the logo?
I do,
there?
Yeah.
So it's so like not as appealing.
Oh, yeah, that is.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
I wouldn't yeah.
Designed by the same man who brought you Medieval Times.
So that was a little fun fact about Oreo. Oreo is the knockoff. Oreo is the ripoff brand.
I think what I also enjoy is that knockoff here is spelled with no K on it. So that's
oh, is it?
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, maybe it printed out weird.
No, that was my spelling.
Oh, was it? Because I have knockoff here printed correctly. Oh,
well, no. That's the second word. Yeah, the first.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Hey, here's the deal. Spelling correct. Didn't correct it. So
actually, knock came first, but it wasn't until 1912 when the K was added. That it really
German. All right. German.
All right. Yes. If we're debating words here and how I spell things, what?
Actually, a knock, N-O-C-K, is a notch at the end of an arrow.
N-O-C-K is a notch at the end of an arrow.
It's a valid word.
So where is knockoff? Why? What is knockoff? Where does the silent K come from? A knockoff. If that, do you know what I mean? Like if there is a like because knock is technically you're knocking on something. So what would the knockoff? Like, where does I wonder where the phrase knockoff, like the slang for a ripoff.
Would you think you're just knocking something off the shelf or some other context, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, that's an interesting etymology.
Yeah, I don't have that. Yeah, that's interesting.
I am curious now. We're gonna find out.
Because knockoff is correctly spelled with a K. Correct.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
But
yeah,
but,
no, it is.
No, it is. It is.
Except but, no substitutes, because you'll be wrong.
But also, N-O-C-K is a notch at the end of an arrow. So that's why that's also spelled correctly.
That it is. And I did not know that about the
Well, because that's why when I spelled that, when I just wrote that headline, it didn't correct it.
Right.
Like, all right. So that's why I left it. But yeah.
Huh. According to phrases.org.uk, the definition of it meaning to steal dates back to the Athenaeum in August 1919, where they're talking about someone stealing a piece of someone's kit. They knocked off with it, so it was like slang.
Interesting.
Slang. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. So that even predates. That's after. Sorry, after Oreo and drugs.
So yeah. Oreo so they didn't know what to call this cookie doppelganger. This real face-off type situation.
Cool. That's wild stuff.
Well, this is let's jump over to technology for a second.
Absolutely. Back to
Bluetooth.
Tech.
You know, everyone in Los Angeles technically
does
should be using it.
Does anybody know what version of Bluetooth we're on nowadays? I don't know.
Have no idea.
I have no idea. I didn't know there were multiple versions.
Yeah, no, there's definitely like we're at least in the twos, if not past the twos at this point.
Like 19.7, I gotta imagine.
4.1 is the latest.
Wow, all right.
Is the latest, according to my research.
So things are still operating on ones and twos, but the new devices.
I think they add functionality to that, and maybe.
Yeah, once there's enough to release a full patch or firmware update, then they can add the little decimal.
I don't even know if I use. I mean, I'm sure I.
Do you use a when you're talking on your phone in the car? Do you
I
use
have a direct auxiliary?
Oh, there you go. Well, when you are connecting your wireless headphones to your computer,
I don't have wireless headphones.
Just bear with me for the sake of argument.
Fair enough. Those are
anyway,
all Bluetooths.
So Bluetooth, the origin of the technology phrase, is actually named after a Danish and Norwegian king named Harald Bluetooth Gormson. Son of King Gorm the Old and Thyra Danabod, the protocols in Bluetooth devices were named after the king, ostensibly due to his abilities to make diverse factions communicate with each other.
Huh.
And the Bluetooth logo is super... I did not know this. It's actually the Nordic runes for his initials. An H and a B, a sort of pointy B, the asterisk.
The asterisk, like the line with the X in it, is an H... As in an H in the Nordic language, and then the pointy B, is the for the B, but the H is what's really interesting. Is it's doesn't resemble anything.
Or if you tilt your head to the side, it's a pair of sunglasses with some sharp eyebrows sticking up.
Yeah, it is.
It's like an angry guy with sunglasses. Yeah.
He's not amused.
He's not amused at Bluetooth. Bluetooth. Not just for old black guys and earpieces.
Wow, that got racial very quickly.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not... It's
Well, do you guys remember Metro PCS, the two-way...
Like, Nextel, yes.
Thank you.
I do remember.
For some reason, like, growing up in the Boston area when I was growing up, like, people loved that shit. They would just always be on their two-way
talk radio.
Yeah, I'm just at Marshall's getting some Fat Farm socks. What are you doing?
My buddy had
the worst.
Yeah. My buddy had that, and it was so annoying. It's like, and there was no vibrate function or anything like that. There was no silent, and you could hear the other people talking.
Oh, yeah, it was basically speakerphone all the time.
It was speakerphone walkie-talkies all the time.
Yeah, and they're just like, what are you going to do about it? Talk to my wife? I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, those were so annoying.
I know they were designed for like construction sites in mind. I think that was the original.
Yeah, because the phones too were like very heavy duty.
Yeah,
like, they were like tumblers.
Back then, every phone was indestructible.
And I think this was like one of those things where maybe it had a different sort of radio than the cell phones. Like it was more reliable in certain areas.
Yeah, and I think it helped with the plan. It helped cut down on minutes and costs.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I was like, you can use cell phones, but
that was also back in a time where you didn't have unlimited minutes,
right?
And all this
back
data
where you
packages.
Had like Nokias that could survive a nuclear holocaust, and you could play.
And
Snake.
Their batteries would like last for a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Forever.
Like my Nokia just died from the year 2000. Finally, it's been plugged in once
forever. Here's a fun thing. What we were talking about earlier about like isotopes and measuring them for stuff on Mars. There was a gentleman by the name of Claire Cameron Patterson who figured out how to use lead isotopic data
for lead dating.
His name is Claire Cameron Patterson, and here's a few quick facts about that. Is in collaboration with George Tilton, Patterson developed the uranium lead dating method into lead dating. And by using lead isotopic data from the Canyon Diablo meteorite, he calculated an average age. He calculated an age for the Earth of around 4.5 billion years, a figure far more accurate than those that existed at the time. And it's pretty much remained unchanged.
The Earth is 2014 years old.
That's what I understand.
Give or take.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. I was watching Indiana Raiders of the Lost Ark earlier today, and I love how he's so like he's when his friend is convincing him to go, and he's like, "Be careful!" And he's all like, "I don't believe in that hocus pocus, you know me," and all that. And he's just, I just think it's so funny that Indiana Jones, he's so such a, I'm a huge fan of Indiana Jones, but I just love how he's a scientist and he's all about other things, but then he's like, "I don't believe in any of that."
Yeah, no, he's very skeptical.
He's very, and I just love that, but yeah, so the Earth is essentially, you know, 4.5 billion years, and that we figured that out a long time ago, and it hasn't predominantly changed. And then also, another fact about Patterson is Patterson's efforts ultimately led to the EPA's, the Environmental Protection Agency, announcing in 1973 a reduction of 60% to 65% in phased steps of removing lead from consumer products and gasoline.
That's why we have unleaded gas.
If it wasn't, Claire Cameron Patterson is the reason behind unleaded gas and lead-free paint and all of that. Because
this is a horrifying stat.
Yeah.
Lead levels within the blood of Americans are reported to have dropped by up to 80% by the late 90s.
Yeah.
That is scary.
People were just chugging lead previously.
So from 1973 to the late 90s, our lead levels in our bodies dropped by like 80% because of his efforts to prevent lead poisoning.
Still, most places you'll move in Los Angeles, if you're like renting an apartment, they will give you a little notice to sign like, "Hey, there's some lead in the building. It's been there since the 60s, and we're not going to do anything about it, but sign here if you want to live here."
Yeah, the Prop 65 warnings, yeah.
It's like, "Hey, we told you, no take-backsies. You can't be pissed about this. Don't eat the paint."
Yeah, so that's some fun fact about, we were talking about measuring how long things are.
That's so great.
Fun fact.
This is another crazy one. A pound of dimes and a pound of quarters are both worth exactly $20.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild to think about.
Yeah.
Because according to the U.S. Mint, the weight of a dime is 2.268
grams, and the weight of a quarter is 5.670 grams, and therefore the weight of five dimes is about the same weight as two quarters, and they're each worth 50 cents. Using the U.S. Mint coin weights, 200 dimes weigh 1 pound, and 80 quarters weigh 1 pound. And the reason that 1 pound of dimes and quarters are worth the same is because the coin's values were originally based on the amount of silver in each coin.
Now it's based on which president is on which coin.
So fun fact about the quarters and the monetary system here, dimes and quarters are called that because that's how much silver. But back when it was based on silver and gold standard, that's how much we used.
Also, fun fact about quarters: Newton is the one who came up with the idea of ridging the edge of your coins.
Really,
It was Newton was obviously famous physicist, you know, and then was supposed to go. There was this whole thing about the time where you basically got you became these awesome, you know, science things, and then they would give you a cushy job to retire into, and he became, I think, treasurer.
Yeah,
and instead of just like. You know,
resting
around,
morals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was like, "I'm going to find ways of preventing counterfeiting and everything else." And the ridging was one of the things he came up with.
Was that more to prevent counterfeiting?
I think it was to prevent counterfeiting.
Okay,
yeah.
For some reason, I was like, "It's definitely for gripping."
No, I'm pretty sure it's to prevent counterfeiting.
It makes
it harder.
My fingernails.
It was something about I think they were. I don't know if they were hollowing them out or doing something to take out some of the material or whatever. Yeah. But it was some strange fact about like that he realized that this would reduce certainly probably more at the time than in current era. But yeah, to
That's
reduce
awesome.
Counterfeiting.
Then I know, like, to prevent counterfeiting and stuff, like on pennies, if you look really closely on the Lincoln Memorial at the back of the penny, you can see like an outline in there's a Lincoln inside that Lincoln Memorial.
Also, fun fact: Mars Curiosity carries one 1909 penny on it.
Really?
Okay. So speaking of
those micro machines that you put a penny in the back
come
and
across,
they can do a wheelie.
It's not one of those. We can't do wheelies on Mars. So the penny sits on. So we were talking about the Hanlon's imager earlier, the one that allows us to kind of look closely at the surface of Mars. It also allows us to kind of look back at the rover. Each instrument, they don't all have to use it, but they can kind of provide a calibration target. So for cameras, you know, you have the just like you would on Earth, you have a red, green, blue kind of calibration target, so you know. Oh, maybe there's dust settling or whatever. You can kind of figure out what you're imaging versus what you have as a truth that you looked at on Earth, and you know exactly what it looks like when it started. And included in that calibration target is one 1909 penny. The 1909 part of it comes from the fact that initially Curiosity was supposed to launch in 2009.
Okay.
We ended up slipping by 2 years. And by that point, they'd already delivered their calibration target, so we stuck with it. But yeah, that is there's one, and you can actually there's some pretty cool pictures of it, and now it has some very fine grain stuff on it, and you can tell. I mean, the camera still does amazing pictures, but when they went back to the image, the calibration target really
so
very cool.
It's still copper. It's still is it brand new? Like, is it a shiny brand new like 1900?
I don't know if somebody polished it before they sent it to Mars.
Or like, how does because that's a brown?
Certainly would have you know
it would be a brown color.
It's
versus
not one of those old
gray.
Like,
it's
gross,
definitely
like,
more of a
ones.
Brownish penny than it is like the shiny.
So that helps for calibrating like brown things, or that's what
I think,
I'm confused.
So
about?
I think this was more of, and I may be misinterpreting, but I think this was more of an attempt. So the calibration target really has the other stuff on there is much more valuable in terms of a purely scientific means. I think there were a couple of ideas, but probably the main thing harkens back to oftentimes geologists will use a unit of currency as a reference size to put adjacent to a fissure on a rock or something else, and that way you take an image of it and you know here it is, it's roughly two penny diameters or whatever. And that way you can kind of, do that. And I think that's more of a nod to, our robot geologists than being on Mars.
I mean, that makes sense. Just, that's an instant point of reference.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I know what a penny
is. It's not on a place where you can actually really image it on next to something on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's there, I think, more, again, as this sort of like, hey, geologists, we do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That reminds me of, there's a thing on Reddit where it's like, here's a banana for scale.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like here's a banana for scale. And it's like, bananas can be multiple. Double sizes. It's so funny.
That's great.
Here's a banana for scale. So funny. Here's a fun fact while we're still talking about, I guess, planets, Mars and everything. An alien, here's a fun fact about the movie Alien.
Yeah.
An alien, Ridley Scott, lit the xenomorph egg chamber by borrowing a blue laser light from The Who were rehearsing their stage show in an adjoining soundstage.
Yeah, so The Who were just getting ready for their big tour. He's like, hey, can I borrow that to make this spooky chamber?
That's awesome.
Another fun fact about the Aliens franchise, in Aliens Resurrection, that basketball shot that Sigourney Weaver makes, that was actually her. She, throws it
Okay.
Yeah, she sunk that. And in Escape from L.A., Kurt Russell made all those basketball shots, including the full court one.
Goddamn, I love Kurt Russell.
Yeah, he's the man.
Why isn't he in more movies? Why isn't Kurt Russell? He's in the new Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah, yeah. Kurt Russell point just does whatever the hell Kurt Russell wants to do.
Goddamn, somebody just... if I was like... Just fucking put him on a Netflix show. Give him a show where he fights bad guys on Netflix.
That'd be fun.
I don't know if that's what he wants to do. Like, I'd watch the shit out of it. I just don't know if that's what he's looking for right now. I think
Kurt Russell, what do you want to do?
I'm Kurt Russell. I do what I please, and I please where I do.
I'm Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell.
Was that Kurt Russell in the studio?
Ladies and gentlemen, Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
I'm Kurt Russell. That's it. What if that's all he did?
They were supposed to do a third escape movie, Escape from Earth, where they had to flee the planet.
I would be the scientific advisor.
Yeah. So, listen, Kurt, John Carpenter, if you guys are listening,
come on, guys.
I think he might not like me after I insulted Ghost of Mars.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, to be fair, I think John Carpenter's not satisfied with Ghost of Mars.
We need one man, but he's a loose cannon.
Yeah, but he gets results.
There's only one man, Snake Plissken. I thought he was dead. We froze him, and we need to unthaw him.
Yeah.
Because it's in the future. There you go. Unfreeze Snake
Plissken.
Script
just writes itself.
Come on, guys. Green light.
I don't know why I have so many freaking facts about Snake Plissken right now, but...
Because he's awesome.
So there's 15 years that elapsed between the filming of Escape from New York and Escape from L.A.
Correct.
He used his exact same costume from the first one and fit. Like a day had not passed. Yeah. Like
he was... You know why? Because in his off time, he hangs out in a Godzilla costume.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He's gonna get down to show weight. Gotta escape from Los Angeles.
Here's a fun fact. We have a listener in Africa. We have a few listeners in South Africa. So every now and then, I like to just kind of include a fact in case he's listening or whatever, what they're listening, etc. And I was looking up this animal, and it looked really, really cool. There's an African animal that looks essentially like a cheetah had sex with a raccoon.
Really Someone's cool. been reading my fan fiction.
The African civet is the largest representative of the African vivarinidae. It's a sole member of its genus, and they are primarily nocturnal and spend the day sleeping in dense vegetation. During the night, when they are most active, they can be found in a wide variety of habitat consisting of thick forest and an open country. So look up African civet, and it's a really fucking cool
animal.
That's a weird animal.
It really does look like a... Cabin of Dr. Caligari or like Dr. Moreau style fusion.
Yeah, it's got like the back half is like kind of leopardy, and then it's fucking just Google it. It's fucking awesome.
It looks like a Photoshop.
Google the African civet. African civet. It's so fucking cool. Like I want to pet one of them. I don't want to pet one of those. I want one as a pet.
Yeah, that's gotta be super illegal.
Send me one if you're listening. Send it over to that.
Don't send him one. Don't send him one, please.
Don't send me one.
It'd terrify people. It'd terrify people if you walked around with that.
I want to put that on a leash and dress it up and walk around Runyon Canyon.
Be the most interesting guy in the neighborhood, like that one dude who has a freaking like lizard on a leash on his shoulder. Just going to Whole Foods. Just trying to get some salad from this bar. My iguana? Maybe you noticed.
Her name's Boba.
Yeah.
Boba.
Because I like bubble tea, and so does she.
Look it up. It's really cool.
Yeah, they have 40 sharp teeth. 40 sharp teeth, Razzle. I hope you know what you're getting yourself into. 40
sharp teeth.
Yeah.
Well, they're mating. I want a baby one. I would train it.
They use abandoned underground burrows for sleeping and nursing babies, so they'll dig tunnels all through your house.
I love how it's like 40 sharp teeth, because 40 teeth in general wouldn't hurt if it bit you regardless. Like,
well, it depends. You know, like a turtle... has just like it'll just grind you down a little bit, unless it's snapping turtle.
Yeah, but there's 40 sharp teeth. How much jaw strength do they have? Because they could have 40 sharp teeth, but their jaws.
It says here can rend a Chevy Aveo asunder in less than a minute.
While we're talking about animals, here's something I learned the other day. I didn't know this. I was playing a game. It's an app called Quiz Up. It's a really fun quiz game, and it was I was doing Disney characters, and it asked what animal. The Maid Marian was on the Disney cartoon Robin Hood, and I ended up getting it wrong because
wasn't a fox, was she?
Well, she was, but she was a vixen. The answer on the game was vixen, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I know of vixen as like a cute girl.
It's a lady fox,
but that's what it is. Is a vixen is a female fox. A female fox is referred to as a vixen.
So, like, the 70s, when people call people, like, foxy ladies.
Yeah.
They're like, that's where vixen... When yeah, exactly. The definition of the word vixen I know is from foxy ladies, is like women foxes. I thought it was some sort of, like, Greek goddess or something, like, oh, she's a vixen.
Yeah, that sounds...
But it's not. It comes from female fox. So there you go. If someone refers to you as a vixen, they're saying you're a female fox.
That would be weird. It would be weird if they said that to me, though.
You're a fox.
You vixen, you.
You vixen, you. Vixen. Yeah. Not a Greek goddess.
No. Alligators. Females are cows. Males are bulls.
What?
Yeah.
Alligators? That's confusing. Yeah.
And it's a congregation of alligators.
I love the plurality of various groups of animals.
There's a shrewdness or a troop of apes.
It was funny. I seen a picture on the internet the other day, because, like, a group of crow, I believe, is a murder.
Yeah.
A murder crow.
Most foul.
And there was two crows sitting on a log, and the caption just read, "Attempted murder." And I thought that was funny. Clever wordplay there. So, yeah, that was fun. What is a group of owls again? What were you looking at? You found something interesting first.
It is a parliament of owls.
That's great.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is really cool. That's an album title right there.
Parliament of Owls.
A consortium of octopi.
Owl City's new album, A Parliament.
That's their it's their team up with George Clinton.
You had a fact. You were like, "Oh, that can't be right." Do you know what that is?
Oh yeah, a new GNU. Those like weird little animals. It was called. They had one. It was a herd, but they had another one where it was. They basically look like emaciated buffalo, like really sexy model type buffalo.
Vixen buffaloes.
Yeah, the vixen of buffaloes. But it said an implausibility of new.
That's.
Which I think that was amazing. Just some like scientist being
why? You know why there that's it? Because there's never going to be that many new next to each other.
Yeah. I wonder it's also though. Impossible. I feel like the scientists who discover these species. Do you think they get to name what the plurality is? Because I would try to find a species just so I could name.
Yeah, just give it something preposterous.
Yes. What?
Okay. Let's play this game.
Oh, I feel like you have to think about that.
Yeah.
There was a while back, and I can't remember what they ended up on, but we were trying to figure out what a group. We have the team specifically. There's a group of people who drive the rover and operate the arm, and they're called rover planners.
Okay.
And someone was trying to come
cool name.
Well, no, they were trying to come up with the plurality of that. Okay. Like, what do you call the group? And I don't remember what they settled on now.
What would you?
This is very disappointing. This is a very anticlimactic story.
You like to leave a little mystery.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I would name them.
Not an implausibility.
Not an implausibility because they're always eating together.
Or not
so
a
they're
murder.
Not a murder. No. I feel like I would have to name it after one of them, like one of their last names.
Yeah.
Not a parliament.
A Heverly of rover planners.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
So how many need to be in a how many need to have to constitute a Heverly?
I would say at least three.
Okay, three or more is a Heverly.
Yeah. A Heverly, three or more is a Heverly. Maybe we need to use that as a.
Yeah,
I'm gonna write that down. A Heverly, and anytime we don't know what a group of something is, I'm just gonna refer to it as a Heverly.
Well, worst case scenario, there's a mob of wombats.
A mob of wombats. I like that, wombats.
Yeah.
Here's a fun fact about. Games. Every now and then we'll have facts about like games and all that. And here's some fun facts about Chinese checkers. Despite its name, the game is not a variation of checkers, nor did it originate in China or in any part of Asia.
What?
Yes. No, it didn't, Dan.
Furious.
The game was invented in Germany in 1892 under the name Stern-Halma as a variation of the older American game Helma. The Stern, German for star, refers to the board's star shape in contrast to the square board used in Halma. So the star shape of Chinese checkers comes from the German version. In the American version, it was just a square. Helma is pretty much the same, only on a 16 by 16 square. So if you take Chinese checkers and you essentially play that on a square, that's the original game Helma.
Mm-hmm.
The name Chinese checkers originated in the United States as a marketing scheme by Bill and Jack Pressman in 1928. They were owners of the Pressman Company. The Pressman Company's game was originally called Hop Ching Checkers.
Thank God that changed.
So bad. So racial.
It's
so
kind of amazing.
Yeah. Hop Ching Checkers. Hey, Mrs. Terwilliger, can Billy come over and play some Hop Ching Checkers? Yeah.
Goddamn. Oh, man.
Yeah. So Chinese checkers...
Now they have P.F. Chang's checkers.
Oh. It's mediocre.
So yeah, some fun fact about Chinese checkers. I remember when I was a kid, I had a plastic... It was a plastic folding. It was like a case. Inside this case, it held marbles and it held checker pieces. And on each side of the case was a board for each... it was a checkerboard and a Chinese checkerboard.
Wow.
To be played on both. Yeah, you could play both... And it was the star. It wasn't the...
it wasn't that bullshit Halma board.
Halma board, no.
If I have to play Halma one more time, I swear to God.
Which is interesting. I had an old joke. Now that I know the history of it, it's interesting because I had one of the first jokes I wrote when I started doing stand-up and telling jokes like 6-8 years ago maybe now was how come Chinese checkers is played on a Jewish star? Because it's funny different nationalities, but now I know, and it's like because...
Traditional Masonic imagery.
Yeah. And because it's German for star, was the German star, so that. There you go. Fun fact about Chinese checkers, ladies and gentlemen.
The
next
plot
time
thickens.
Next time you're at a bar trivia.
Yeah, next time you find yourself playing Chinese checkers and curious about its heritage,
there you
wonder
go.
No more.
Yeah. Well, we're approaching our time for the episode.
Yeah.
Our time is getting up.
Much like an asymptote, we have pushed it to the limit.
Yeah.
I hope I used that right.
What did you say? I think that's good. Yeah.
Asymptote?
Asymptote.
How do you spell it?
Asymptote. Yep. Asymptote.
Yeah. Tote. And what is that?
That's when, if you drew a graph or anything, when something approaches a limit but never quite hits it.
Okay. Basically, like, here's a limit. The graph. I'm holding up my hand.
He's holding up his hand.
Basically, like, imagine a wall, and then someone speeding towards the wall, running alongside it, but never touching it.
Okay, kind of like that snake game.
Yeah, yes. Sort of.
Like that snake video.
But you're always getting slightly closer to the wall.
Okay.
But never... It's like, imagine, like, you take a half step, and then you take half of a half step. And then a half of a half of a half step. So each time you're getting a little closer, but you're never actually making it all the way there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I learned something new every
day. Today you learned.
Today I learned what an asymptote is.
Asymptote.
Yeah.
Asymptote. Huh. Awesome. Cool. So, we'd like to end with plugging anything you got. What do you got? What do you want to plug?
I don't have a whole lot to plug,
you
guys.
You got to plug NASA.
Check out
JPL.
Check out NASA. It's great. No, there are all kind of cool pictures.
Are there any... go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I mean, NASA has... NASA and JPL and both of those things, they have great Instagram and Twitter feeds.
They
and things
do.
Like that.
They
so,
do.
If you like to see... cool photos of the universe and planets, and I always enjoy them.
Yeah, and you're awesome. always retweeting some really cool
he's
stuff.
He's always retreating.
You're always retreating from Mars.
Run
from those places. No, and it's amazing. I think what really amazes me is that, especially for the Mars stuff, we are posting the pictures within 24 hours of them coming down from another planet. So, you know, what you're seeing is what's happening on Mars. Yesterday essentially.
Yeah.
So it's very cool, and you can find all that online at NASA's website.
NASA has a cool their Twitter too has they got a NASA social or something like that, and they're always anytime like a rocket is getting launched, they'll post live feed of it.
So NASA shows are awesome. You can sign up for these things. You can also participate. They'll basically have a small group come out for a launch or a major event or whatever, and they get to see usually get some special tours and some very cool stuff, and you get to interact with other nerds who love space things, which
nerds!
Is awesome. It's a great
group. So fucking fun.
It's a great group.
Oh, quick aside, I was in Iceland recently for work, and my first day there, my coworker and I were walking from our hotel to
our
first appointment. Yeah, what's up, Jesse? I hope you're listening. And a car drives past and yells, "Nerds!" I'm just glad that some things
How did
transcend.
They call you out so quick?
I don't know. They must have known.
Here we go.
Yeah.
What do you call a group of nerds?
Oh, no.
There's got to be something for that already.
Yeah.
Someone's got to come up with that one.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is weird because I remember... So I went to MIT in Boston. And Boston, for the most part, it's like a college town.
Yeah.
But I feel like there was always like this immediate like, oh, that guy's from MIT.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I wasn't wearing like thick glasses or anything. Like, I was like, how do you know?
You just get a smart aura about you, and I don't like it. It threatens me.
Because you don't carry yourself or appear as a nerd. You got it. You came in here wearing a really cool jacket. You got a mohawk. Yeah. You got, you know.
I mean, you were stuffed in a locker. Fit. That was the only indication.
Yeah, that's how you're obviously fit. You know, you take care of yourself, so you don't exactly give off the presence
of like
a,
I generally don't. Well, certainly not what like, people, especially as like what a, people traditionally associate with nerds. I feel like nerds are actually all kinds of people nowadays, yes, so it's not really. But even like this is now 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. I'm not to date myself, but yeah, when I was in college and grad school. And so I feel like that was still not quite.
Yeah.
You know, still maybe a little more, but it was just very immediate. Like, people were like, oh, no, I know where you're coming from.
I get you.
Maybe like in downtown Boston, like in a bar that's not near any of the campuses.
I'm you're one of those people.
Yeah. So I'm going to give off some sort of, sort of smell.
Remind me not to play blackjack with you.
He's counting cards.
He's counting cards. Here's a fun fact about counting cards real quick. Did you guys read
the
this?
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
Yes, that's so great. What if you got kicked out of a casino?
If you can't, like, if you don't love Ben Affleck enough, he got kicked, and this is the second one, he got banned from playing blackjack at the Hard Rock Hotel Casino in Las Vegas because he was somehow they discovered him counting cards. Now, the reason Hard Rock knew is because he got kicked out of the Wynn, I think. And they alerted, they sent out a thing letting all these other casinos
I definitely
know.
Like him more because of
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
like
Ben Affleck, millionaire, Oscar award winner, actor. What is he doing in his
Batman.
Downtime? Batman. What is he doing in his downtime? Count cards.
Yeah, just try. Just to skim a little off the top.
Because he was doing so, he was doing like, he was killing it. And I guess Hard Rock's like, oh, okay, this is not a, this is a real thing. He's actually counting cards.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so fucking funny. Ben Affleck can be Batman in my book now.
Yeah, no, he's earned it. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something Batman would do, actually.
Absolutely, yeah.
You think Bruce Wayne doesn't count cards?
Absolutely.
He doesn't like to lose.
No.
Bruce Wayne has his own deck.
Bruce Wayne counts cards and cheats. That's how fucking awesome Batman is.
You know, we'd get to be a billionaire without counting a few cards.
Yeah. Now, real quick, too. There's NASA and JPL for our listeners.
Yeah, so
who don't
there are both. I mean, well, there's actually, and there's all the different NASA centers. I'm obviously a little part. I can't even think of the word. Partial to JPL.
Mm-hmm.
All the centers have. Goddard has some amazing photographs as well. There's a lot of centers that really, I think, kind of have a good idea of what kind of captures people's imaginations. So it's great.
Yeah.
It's fun stuff to follow.
Awesome. Nice.
And where can people find you on the World Wide Web?
I'm mostly on Twitter, I guess, most of the time, at Tweets Out Loud. It's one word, I guess, or one, no spaces. But on Facebook and Google and all those
and
usual
on Instagram,
things.
You're and on Instagram, at Tweets Out Loud.
Also
you're,
Tweets Out Loud on Instagram.
Instagram, follow, if I don't, it's not private, right? Like
no,
everybody
no, it's
can
all,
follow.
Yeah.
Tweets Out Loud on Instagram, really, that's his Instagram account. He's fucking always posting really cool Mars
I try to
photos.
Show people like what it's like at work and what's happening on Mars.
The photos from Mars you post are so like, there was one where it's just the horizon and it was so fucking beautiful.
It's really cool.
It looked
cool.
Like you used a filter. Obviously, you didn't.
What's cool about those is like these cameras are 1 and 2 megapixel cameras.
Yeah, they're
they
old
have some
cameras.
Amazing. Like they just have some amazing engineers who went into, you know, worked on the optics. But you have to, you know, we started this mission, you know, really in the early 2000s, and you have to start picking parts,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the mid 2000s, and even then you're picking parts that are space qualified. So that means they've already had to go through some sort of life testing to prove that they're safe for space. So they're, you know, everything we have is almost basically state of the art on Earth 10 plus years ago.
Outdated.
And yet, like, I mean, some of the photographs, like the selfies and everything else, I mean, you look at it, it looks incredibly
good. We're essentially driving around on Mars like a Hummer, like a 2001 state-of-the-art, brand-new Hummer.
Yeah, with, like, an iMac.
Yeah.
You know, one of those old Bondi blue iMacs, the plastic shell cases.
The old teal.
Yeah, the teal iMac. That's the kind of computing
That's
power we're talking, yeah.
Amazing.
Driving around the Mars, Curiosity on Mars. That's amazing. And for those of you that don't know this, it's powered by plutonium, right?
It is. We have a radioisotope thermal generator, which just basically takes this heat from the inside and this cool on the outside and drives essentially a current.
Yeah.
And so we get about 100 watts, not much more than actually an old light bulb, 100 to 110 watts.
Okay, wow.
So not even close to a gigawatt.
Nowhere near a gigawatt. We're not and we
close.
Can't get very fast. We
you
go about no more than 2 inches per second, so that's a lot slower than 80 miles an hour.
Screaming along.
Let's see if these guys can do 80.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Fun times. Well, we appreciate you joining us. I've
been
trying
to get you
on for
a while,
and we're glad we finally got you.
I'm glad I could be here.
I hope you guys listened to it, enjoyed it. I mean, of course.
Yeah, I hope you didn't just black out, then wake up at this moment. That would be unfortunate. If you did, please rewind to the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
If you fell asleep for some reason during this, you probably have somewhere important to be right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah. Hopefully not in the shower.
If you fell asleep listening to this, this has been a 20-hour podcast.
Yeah.
We've been invaded by...
I wish this were War of the Worlds.
Oh my god. Next time. Yeah. But guys, if you want to talk to us on Twitter, you can find the podcast at TWL Podcast. We're on Facebook, Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan. You can email us even, TWLpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to talk to us individually, I am at OsteoFerocious.
And I am at My Name is Razzle 2. On Twitter and on Instagram. If we're plugging Instagrams while we're at it, I am on Instagram, just at My Name is Razzle. And once again, we want to thank you guys for listening. We want to thank Bobek for joining us. We want to thank everybody for giving us support and all that. And if you like this episode, feel free to tell your friends to listen to it and give us a good rating on iTunes. And once again, I want to give a shout out to Aristotle, our producer here, recordinger. He'll laugh and inflate our egos, and every now and then he'll give us a good fact, and he lets us know how we're doing on time. And he does a really great job. And I just you've heard him a couple weeks ago on the podcast. He had a fun fact, and just want to give a shout out to him, and we appreciate him and all that. So, leave a comment on Nerdist.com and say how awesome Aristotle is. And thanks again for listening. And as always,
a multiplicity of nerds is called a hypothesis.
Is that true?
No.
Oh, fuck it. I don't know. Thanks, guys.
I like it.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.